Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. And as a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. At this time, I would like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Well, thank you, Mary, and I, too, would like to welcome everyone to today's Cancer Care Connect workshop, Caring for Your Bones When You Have Prostate Cancer. And this is a program that we are delighted to be able to offer to you today, and this is a collaborative effort between Cancer Care and many other cancer organizations. And it really is because of that collaboration that we've been able to reach so many of you on the call today. Now, we have on the call today over 541 participants. So there's a lot of you from all of the United States. You come from all different states and regions of the United States, and we have international participants from Canada, Korea, Mexico, and the United Kingdom. So clearly you come from all over the world and are a group of information seekers interested in getting as much information as you can in this next hour. I'd like to turn your attention for a moment to the materials that you received from Cancer Care. In those materials is information about our speakers, the topics they'll be covering, and there is a lot of information about all of the different collaborating organizations as resources for you to use as you move forward. And we also include an evaluation form, and you know that's really important for us to get your feedback to these programs. You know, when you think about it, who but each of you can really best tell us the topics and the workshops that you'd like us to offer going forward. And we're planning lots of programs, but I have to say your input really makes it possible for us to make programs that are relevant to meet your needs. So tell us what you want, and we'll try very hard to offer it. Indeed, today's workshop was one that was selected by many of you in terms of a topic that you wanted us to offer. Now, this activity today is supported by an educational donation provided by Amgen, and we want to thank them for their support of the program today. Now, we have wonderful speakers on our program today, really, and I'm delighted to introduce them to you. Our first speaker is going to be Dr. Walter Stadler. Dr. Stadler is the Fred C. Buffett Professor of Medicine and Surgery, Sections of Hematology, Oncology, and Urology, University of Chicago. And Dr. Stadler is going to address an overview of prostate cancer treatment, managing bone health and bone metastases, dental care during treatment, and clinical trials. It's my pleasure to turn the program over to Dr. Stadler.
Hi, this is Dr. Stadler, and I also want to add my welcome and am grateful that so many of you have decided to join us today. This is, in many ways, an exciting time for treatment of prostate cancer. And my sort of general statement to patients as well as my colleagues is that prostate cancer and even metastatic prostate cancer to the bone has really become a chronic disease. Now, this is not to minimize the seriousness of the disease, but it is a disease that we often manage for long periods of time, much like we manage other serious medical conditions such as diabetes or heart disease. Now, the other, I think, important issue for prostate cancer is that we have true targeted therapy for this particular cancer. There's been a lot of popular press as well as scientific press on the new targeted therapies for cancer and how these are changing the way we treat cancer. And in fact, for prostate cancer, we have had targeted therapy for over a half a century. And in this particular case, the target is the androgen receptor. The androgen receptor is the receptor that mediates the effects of the male hormone testosterone. And testosterone is an important growth factor for prostate cancer. And when we remove testosterone from the system or block the androgen receptor, we have effective therapy. And this was first discovered in the 1940s and 50s by Dr. Huggins and has been further developed since. And so most patients who have a cancer, prostate cancer, that has spread or has metastasized, especially if it is metastasized to the bones, and we can detect that on a bone scan or on a CT scan, we treat those patients with androgen ablation. And essentially, that means in the man removing the hormone testosterone, which can be done either by medications that shut down the production of testosterone from the testicles, or removing the testicles surgically. Now, both of these treatments, although highly effective in more than 90% of patients, are associated with their own sets of side effects, and we don't necessarily have the time on this conference call to discuss all the side effects of androgen ablation, but an important side effect for today's conversation is the effects of androgen ablation on the bone. More specifically, when one takes away a man's testosterone, men develop bone loss, often at the same rate as women who undergo menopause, and the biggest difference is that the rate of bone loss in men on androgen ablation continues at the same rate throughout the course of androgen ablation, whereas in women who go through menopause, there is a peak rate of bone loss shortly after menopause. And just like in women, we need to manage this bone loss, and there are several simple things that can be done. One of the simple things is just exercise and weight bearing. Certainly, we're not asking our patients to run marathons or start triathlons, but we do ask our patients to begin walking programs, and just simple walking programs can often make a big difference. In addition, we typically ask our patients to begin taking calcium and vitamin D supplements, the same recommendations that we use for women following menopause apply here, and this includes somewhere around 1,500 milligrams of calcium on a daily basis, and somewhere between usually 400 and 800 international units of vitamin D. In addition, we often recommend that men monitor their bone mineral density through a simple DEXA scan performed at baseline and every 2 years. If there is evidence of frank osteoporosis, despite exercise, calcium, and vitamin D, then the bisphosphonates have been shown to treat this particular problem, and the recommended bisphosphonates, according to many of our organizations, would be either an annual zoledronate or weekly alendronate are the medications that we typically recommend. Now, once patients become castrate resistant, the typical androgen ablation that I just described is no longer effective. In other words, the cancer continues to grow despite the standard initial hormonal therapy. One of the important things that we've learned over the last several years is that there are still drugs that can attack this androgen pathway and can be highly effective. A number of these drugs are in development, and the first of these, abiraterone, has been approved for use. And this has thus become an exciting time for many of us, because these drugs have been shown to be highly effective and to continue to provide appropriate therapy for patients. The in the context of today's conversation, the issue of bone and bone health becomes a little bit more urgent when we talk about the castrate-resistant disease. In this particular scenario now, there can be additional complications from the bone metastases, and this includes pain, fractures, as the most prominent complications. And here we often become a little bit more aggressive in regards to treating the bone metastases. And for patients who have castrate-resistant disease with bone metastases, we generally recommend that they undergo treatment with either zoledronate every 3 to 4 weeks, or now more recently denosumab, another drug which we can give every 4 weeks. And both of these agents have been shown to decrease the risk for developing bony complications from castrate-resistant prostate cancer that has spread to the bone. Now, I mentioned these medications, zoledronate and denosumab, a couple of times now, and one of the things that we have to be careful about, as with all of our drugs, is the issue of side effects and toxicities. With zoledronate, one can have a infusion reaction when the drug is given. The drug is given intravenously, and about 10 to 15% of patients develop a fever, bony aches and pains, and muscle aches and pains 24 to 48 hours after the infusion. This reaction tends to be worse the first time one gets the medication, and then tends to be less on subsequent infusions, and is not particularly dangerous and can be treated with simple analgesics and pain medications. Zoledronate is also associated with renal dysfunction or damage to the kidneys, which can be monitored, and occasionally the medication needs to be either discontinued or dose modified. Both of the medications can also rarely be associated with a dental problem called osteonecrosis of the jaw, which is a damage to the jawbone in the places where the teeth enter the jawbone. If left untreated or if not recognized, these this condition can progress to be quite painful and quite difficult to manage. However, what's important to recognize is that these this condition develops most commonly in patients who are on these medications and who have at the same time major dental work such as teeth extraction, root canals, and other major procedures that interrupt, so to speak, or surgically interrupt the jawbone. And I think, therefore, that two things are important. One is a good dental examination prior to starting these medications, and that any major dental procedures be conducted prior to starting these medications. In addition, a good oral hygiene, the usual things we hear from our dentists about brushing, flossing, etc., will also help in preventing these kind of complications. And then early recognition, if a complication occurs, will allow the medications to be stopped and allow appropriate treatment with antibiotics and oral antibiotic rinses that can prevent an early osteonecrosis of the jaw from becoming a major dental problem. Finally, I'll just mention very briefly that there are a number of additional interesting drugs that are in development, some of which appear to be targeting the bone. There is a drug that goes by the name of XL-184 and a generic name of that has been showing some very interesting early benefit in patients with bone metastases, and that is now being investigated further and shows a lot of promise. So my sort of summation here would simply be to say that metastatic prostate cancer is a highly treatable disease. It is a disease for which we have a number of agents in addition to our standard androgen ablation, and that can be treated effectively even when it is metastatic to the bone, and we can treat both the cancer as well as the underlying bone problems that this cancer can cause. So I'll stop there and turn it over to our moderator again.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Stadler, for an excellent overview and presentation, really for making the very complex understandable for everybody on the call. So I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A. Thank you so much. Our next speaker is Dr. Timothy Showalter. Dr. Showalter is Assistant Professor, Associate Director, Residency Program, Department of Radiation Oncology, Thomas Jefferson University Hospital. Dr. Showalter is going to address the role of radiation oncology in managing bone metastases, pain and symptom management, doctor-patient communication, and quality of life concerns. Dr. Showalter?
Thank you, Carolyn, and I would like to thank the Cancer Care Organization for giving me the invitation to speak here today. And I'm grateful for all the call participants, including prostate cancer patients, their families, and their caregivers, for joining us during this session today. As Carolyn mentioned, I'm a radiation oncologist who is primarily focused on the care of prostate cancer patients, as well as on patient-centered research for locally advanced prostate cancer. I must admit that the biggest challenges I generally face in the clinic are for patients with bone metastases from prostate cancer, mostly because the treatment decisions are so complex because there are so many effective treatment options that can be quite helpful and should be used for men with metastatic prostate cancer. I'm going to focus primarily on the care of men who have metastatic prostate cancer with bone metastases. Now, most of the time, prostate cancer remains localized within the prostate gland and does not spread. But when prostate cancer does spread, it tends to spread to either lymph nodes or bone. When prostate cancer spreads to bone, it is called metastatic prostate cancer with bone metastases. And many of my patients have thought that this means that they have bone cancer, but it's not bone cancer. It's different than that, and that would be much more rare and treated differently. When prostate cancer metastasizes, the most common sites of spread within the bone include the spine, especially the lower portion, which is called the lumbar spine, the pelvis, hips, ribs, and the upper parts of the arms or legs. And pain is by far the most common symptom that patients with bone metastases from prostate cancer can experience. But you can also sometimes see nerve-related pain or weakness from pinched nerves, and sometimes bone metastases can compress the spinal cord. And if this happens, spinal cord compression can result in paralysis or loss of sensation and requires urgent treatment, and often the treatments are highly effective. Bone metastases can also cause fractures due to weakening of the bone, again, a situation that's highly treatable. Bone metastases are often detected on imaging studies, most commonly the bone scan, but also plain X-ray films, CT scans, and MRIs are important. Very rarely a bone biopsy may be performed and requested by doctors to confirm bone metastases. There are several types of care providers who contribute to the care of patients with bone metastases. There are radiation oncologists like me, but it's also important to involve medical oncologists, urologists, and surgeons. I find that orthopedic surgeons can be essential to caring for patients with bone fractures or impending fractures from bone metastases. Neurosurgeons may become important for those patients who have bone metastases that compress nerves or the spinal cord. And physical medicine and rehabilitation doctors can help improve function and recovery from bone metastases. in addition to all these physician specialists, the help of nurses, physical therapists, mental health professionals, and nutritionists can also be quite helpful for patients and should not be overlooked. Radiation oncologists can provide treatment for bone metastases using two potential treatment approaches, external beam radiation therapy and radiopharmaceuticals. Now, external beam radiation therapy is the most common form of radiation treatment for prostate cancer, and I would imagine is probably familiar to most prostate cancer patients and their families, at least as a concept. External beam radiation therapy can be directed to sites of painful bone metastases in order to relieve pain and could be effective at also preventing bone fractures. In such an approach, the effect of external beam radiation therapy is limited to the bone metastases that are included in the radiation field. So in that regard, it's kind of a local treatment. Depending on the situation, external beam radiation can be given in as few as one treatments or as many as 15 treatments. For patients with widespread bone metastases from prostate cancer, there's also another form of radiation that's used. And this includes radiopharmaceuticals such as strontium or samarium. And these drugs can be effective for some patients. These are given by intravenous infusion. It's a different way of delivering the radiation, and the radiation is targeted to the bone metastases. These radiopharmaceuticals are effective at relieving pain in men and are appealing for prostate cancer patients who have diffuse bony pain from bone metastases. There are concerns sometimes about lowering blood counts, especially platelets and white blood cells with radiopharmaceuticals. So recommendations are individualized from patient to patient, and these tools are combined differently for each individual patient. Radiation oncologists should be involved in the care of prostate cancer patients with bone metastases to help patients determine what radiation treatments may be most helpful for them. So let's speak specifically about pain and symptom management for patients with bone metastases. So the majority of patients who do have bone metastases will have bony pain and are at some risk for bone fracture or spinal cord compression, as well as potentially elevated blood calcium levels. And there are treatments that are effective for all these things. Bone fracture and spinal cord compression are sometimes treated with combinations of surgery and radiation therapy, and treatment for elevated blood calcium levels can include bisphosphonates and other treatments. In general, I like to focus on management of pain from bone metastases. So typically, when we're treating pain from bone metastases with radiation therapy, we're using an approach called palliative treatment, since we're targeting one particular area and the goal is to improve symptoms. Now, there's a long list of available treatments, which include pain medication, bisphosphonates, biological therapies, hormonal therapy, chemotherapies, surgery, and the two types of radiation therapy I discussed. So the decisions are often complex. Pain medication can include simple things like non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, for example, ibuprofen or naproxen, or opiate pain medications, and, you know, common ones that people are aware of are morphine or oxycodone. And it's definitely necessary to treat pain from bone metastases as aggressively as possible and at the discretion of the patients and physicians. Oftentimes, this requires careful titration or changing the dose levels of opiate pain medicines to make sure that we're providing adequate pain relief. And the addition of a stool softener or other interventions is often needed for constipation related to opiate pain medicines, and that should be anticipated. Radiation therapy is an effective treatment for pain relief from bone metastases from prostate cancer patients. Radiation therapy often provides long-lasting pain relief for patients with bone metastases for the area treated, and it can also prevent bone fracture or nervous system or spinal cord injury. In general, most patients receive some pain relief from radiation therapy, and almost a quarter receive complete pain relief from their area of pain. Patients can often reduce the amount of opiate pain medicine they need once they finish radiation therapy. The pain relief that patients receive from radiation therapy is not immediate. It usually takes 1 to 2 weeks after the radiation therapy starts for patients to start to notice an improvement in their pain. When patients receive external beam radiation therapy, the improvement in pain relief will occur in the region treated by radiation, as I've mentioned. For patients who receive radiopharmaceutical treatment, the pain relief may occur really throughout the skeletal system. Patients continue to have improvement in pain for several more weeks after radiation therapy, and the amount of relief can really last for several months or even years. Some patients do experience temporary flare of pain during radiation treatments as the bone metastases respond to radiation, and sometimes these patients will require anti-inflammatory medicine to help reduce the pain flare. It's important for doctors and patients to discuss the possibility of a pain flare before the radiation therapy starts so that patients and their caregivers can anticipate the problem and have a plan in place to notify the doctor. Sometimes when pain comes back after an initial response to radiation therapy, it may be helpful for a patient to receive a repeat course of radiation therapy. re-irradiation can be performed safely, and it is often effective. However, it is important that the radiation oncologist has information regarding the prior radiation therapy, including whether it was external beam radiation or radiopharmaceutical, what part of the body was treated, what the previous radiation dose was, and what the facility treated the patient. Most of the times, the radiation oncologist will want to request records from previous treatments, and these records can sometimes influence the design of the subsequent radiation therapy. And often, patients and their families are really most helpful in the transfer of information. Doctor-patient communication is really essential. It's always critical in prostate cancer treatment for any patients. And I really view it as absolutely essential if patients with bone metastases are to receive the most individualized and best care for them. All patients with prostate cancer, including those without bone metastases, should talk to their doctors about bone health. As mentioned previously, there are lots of options that Dr. Stadler mentioned for medical management with calcium, vitamin D, bisphosphonates, and other medications, as well as exercise and other lifestyle interventions. And all of these factors are important for reducing bone loss from prostate cancer treatments. And for the patients who have bone metastases, it's even more important to communicate because this information can include information about pain and can help patients understand the risks of fracture and nerve injury related to bone metastases. In order to give the best care possible, the doctors and nurses involved really need to understand where the pain is, exactly what type of pain is your patient's experiencing, as well as the severity of the pain. And they'll ask you to point out the pain on your body and describe how it feels in detail. They may ask you to grade your pain using on a scale of 1 to 10, and they're trying to collect meaningful data that can help them figure out how you're responding to radiation. And they may ask as well if there are any triggers that make the pain worse or anything that makes the pain better. The information is really important for your doctor to understand where the pain is coming from and how best to treat it. It's important to give feedback to the healthcare providers regarding pain and other symptoms. Only through an ongoing dialogue can pain medication be adjusted and decisions be made for additional treatment. So I just want to highlight that communication is really key when working with healthcare providers and explaining what's going on. Lastly, I just want to talk about some quality of life concerns. As I said before, most prostate cancer patients who have bone metastases experience pain, and there's often a clear decrease in quality of life just related to the pain. And I think that quality of life is a primary concern for patients with bone metastases for prostate cancer and really should be a focus for all caregivers as well. And there's an extreme example of the significance of quality of life for advanced cancer patients that I often share with my patients because it really gives a proof of principle. And I think it validates concerns about quality of life and encourages them to be proactive and to communicate well. I often mention a 2010 study published in the New England Journal of Medicine that looked at patients with advanced metastatic lung cancer, so a different type of cancer, and randomized patients to usual care versus usual care plus early access to a palliative care team. And interestingly, the group that received care that involved palliative care specialists where interventions were done to really improve quality of life also had a related improvement in overall survival that was seen compared to the group who did not have access to early palliative care. So I think this really highlights the importance of optimizing quality of life using a more objective measure and really demonstrates a strong connection between these quality of life concerns and other outcomes. And although this isn't a prostate cancer study, I do think it's relevant to any patient with metastatic cancer. I think that related stories are emerging for prostate cancer, so I may have a better prostate cancer example to share with my patients. But I think that these two issues are connected, and I think the quality of life is very important, and we should all pay attention to it. Although pain is the most common consequence of bone metastases that can impair quality of life, there are two other special considerations, and these include the risk of developing pathological bone fractures due to bone metastases. And we know that patients who have fractures like that have significant decreases in their quality of life. This fractures can result in limited mobility and impairment of normal daily activities. So it's important to use surgical fixation like rodding or stabilization when necessary and to combine that often with radiation therapy to prevent fractures. And the most common example of this that we see in the clinic is when the hip is involved with bone metastasis from prostate cancer, and often orthopedic surgeons and other folks are very helpful in managing this. The second thing to think about is spinal cord compression, which can also result in major reductions in function and quality of life for patients. Since the spinal cord is responsible for so many critical things, walking, strength, sensation, we often aggressively use surgery and radiation therapy to prevent or treat spinal cord compression from bone metastases that are involving the vertebral bodies. And the treatments are often highly effective, and patients subsequently have a really high level of function. It's important to be aggressive in this setting. In summary, like to just highlight a few points. The multidisciplinary treatment of bone metastases from prostate cancer is really a coordinated effort with a number of effective tools available, and the coordination involves both patients and doctors as well as other healthcare providers. By treating pain and by avoiding or treating pathological fractures, cord compression, or other nerve damage, quality of life can really be maximized for patients with bone metastases for prostate cancer. I think improving quality of life is an important goal for prostate cancer treatment, and optimizing bone health is an important component of this. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Showalter. That was an excellent presentation, and really such incredible attention also to people's quality of life and pain management, and just a lot of excellent tips, so thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, we now have time for questions. This has been amazing. I want to thank our speakers for allowing this to happen so we have time for questions, and we really invite you to ask questions of our two expert faculty. I'm going to ask Mary to bring both of our faculty on board in terms of they're just opening their lines now, and we're going to be open to your questions, and I'm going to ask Mary to explain to you how to queue up for questions, and we welcome your questions. Mary?
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star then one on your touch-tone telephone. If your question has been answered and you wish to remove yourself from the queue, you may press the pound key. Our first question comes from Emil S.
Hi. I sometimes suffer from lower back pain and or sciatica even before I had the prostate cancer. A, how do I differentiate between lower back pain and prostate cancer metastases? Can the metastases also occur in other joints, as in the wrist and foot? And how is bone pain different from organ, muscle, or tissue pain?
These are excellent questions, Emil. You're the first person to ask a question today, and it's a very excellent and complex question. I'm going to ask, Dr. Stadler to start, and then Dr. Showalter to add to your question, to add to other comments. Just a very excellent question. Dr. Stadler?
Sure. So this is often a discussion that's an ongoing discussion between the patient and the physician in the clinic. Importantly, we have essentially three things that we can utilize for assessing the status of a patient's prostate cancer. The first is a patient's symptoms and how does the patient feel today. The second is a PSA. In general, progressive cancer is accompanied by an increase in the PSA, and improving cancer is accompanied by a decrease in the PSA. And the third is by imaging. These include bone scans and CT scans. Other imaging tests are coming along as perhaps helpful as well. And it is usually a combination of these three modalities that allow us to make a decision of whether a pain is due to joints and chronic low back pain from things like osteoarthritis versus pain from the cancer itself. I would say that at least in my clinic, we can make that distinction probably in about 90% of the patients using these three simple criteria. The most common locations of pain, I think, as Dr. Showalter mentioned, from the cancer itself would be in the spine and in the ribs. It is quite unusual to have prostate cancer in things like the wrists, the fingers, and the joints, and that also helps us distinguish whether pain is due to a arthritic and joint problem as opposed to a bone problem from the cancer itself.
Excellent. Thank you. Dr. Showalter, do you?
I think the last part of the caller's question was about how organ related pain might feel different than bone pain, and this is where, as Dr. Stadler mentioned, the getting an understanding of the patient's symptoms and physical exam findings as well as imaging results can help distinguish things. Often the bone pain can be localized based on a patient's symptoms or examination to one particular part of the bone, and the pain can be sort of an achy pain that worsens with touch, whereas an organ-related pain is often deeper in the central part of the body and may not change with touch or may relate to other triggers.
Excellent. Awesome. Thank you. And Emil, I also hear, and I'm sure this is true for many people on the call today, that just kind of concern or worry about, what if I have some pain, what is going on, and how do I figure it out, and how do I work with my healthcare team to figure that out? And I think Dr. Stadler and Dr. Showalter have identified some of the things that you can work with your healthcare team about. Also, many people find it helpful to be a part of some type of a prostate cancer support group or individual help, just to kind of talk these things out, because it's the issue of figuring out how to live with these things going on, and working with your healthcare team, and also getting back to the living your life and finding a way to manage these. And I am going to ask Dr. Showalter and Dr. Stadler if they could just comment on the kind of I'm sure many of your patients have similar concerns to Emil, and just that kind of worry, and some of your recommendations of just how your patients tend to get that, how they get this figured out, and then get on to not having to worry about every day, does this pain mean this, does this pain mean that, in terms of working out a program with you so that they can feel a little bit more comfortable about what's going on.
Sure, I can start. So I follow my patients, indefinitely for years and years, and I have many long-term relationships with patients. And if a patient is concerned about an area of pain, whether or not it's related to cancer, that's often an indication to order additional tests, including, maybe a shorter interval PSA sooner than we would otherwise, and very often imaging studies as well to evaluate that. I try to encourage patients to report any concerns at all that they have, and help them, help reassure them that, in general, most of these things are not related to their prostate cancer. And when they are, we look closely to identify them with bone scans or X-ray imaging studies, and figure out what we can do to help.
And I agree with that, and I would just add that communication here is critically important. And there's two aspects of this. One. You should tell your, physician and your healthcare team the symptoms that you're experiencing. We can't read minds, and the more you tell us, the better able we are to provide advice. And secondly, not every pain is due to cancer. Importantly, we all have aches and pains that we deal with in the morning, and you're still allowed to have those same aches and pains even if you have cancer, and it does not necessarily mean that it is directly due to the cancer.
Thank you. That's an excellent point for everyone to keep in mind. And, you do have a multidisciplinary team right here, and you can see the advantage of just really contacting your physicians, asking your questions, if that's really so important right away. I'm going to ask Dr. Showalter and Dr. Stadler to weigh in on this, but we encourage people to call their doctors when they have a concern, to not wait. I know many of you may have appointments that are scheduled over time, may also live far distances from your healthcare team. So how do you both feel about someone calling up on the phone and with a question, or calling your office and saying, look, I'm really worried about this, what would be the next step, as opposed to waiting a month for the next appointment?
So I, for myself within radiation oncology, I encourage my patients to call, or many of them now are emailing me with questions, and that's generally how I spend, 4:30 to 6 p.m. each day, and I welcome that, because I think it's great to stay in touch and really address concerns as early as possible. Patients should realize that, physicians and nurses and other people involved in their healthcare are not going to be mad if they call before their appointment. And we certainly welcome questions. Sometimes it actually helps make the office visits much more valuable, because if a patient's concerned, and if their concerns sound valid on the phone, we can very often order extra testing that can be done prior to the office visit. So I find it very helpful to have to receive phone calls from patients with their concerns.
Absolutely. The bottom line is that's our job. And we all work in a team of healthcare providers with nurses and physicians. And my sense is if a physician and nurse treatment team don't want to take your calls for your concerns, then it might be time to find someone who is willing to take those concerns. And that's what we're here for. The only other thing I would say is, you know, I think, like Dr. Showalter, do use email and modern communication methods. I have sometimes mixed feelings about those things. I think that they're a great way to communicate simple concepts and communicate the results and sort of give, for example, a time when one can call. But email is probably not a good way if one wants to communicate an acute semi-emergent situation, or if one wants to have a long discussion about the various meanings of the disease and the stage of the disease, in which case it's probably better to pick up the phone or have a meeting in face-to-face at an appointment.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I generally receive questions by email, but it's there are very few questions that can be answered over email. So I generally, it prompts a phone call to the patient. And I would absolutely agree with Dr. Stadler.
Excellent. So you all heard this right here. The doctors want to hear from you, and you can call them, email them, and that's really so important, very, very much important. Okay. Mary?
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you do have a question, please press star then one. Our next question comes from David D.
Yes. Once a patient has been diagnosed with castrate-resistant prostate cancer but does not have bone mets, are there any studies that show early start of medication treatment can prevent or delay the development of the bone mets?
Excellent question. Dr. Stadler, would you want to address that?
Yes, I'll address that. So there are a number of studies that have shown some promise. Probably the most prominent trial that was presented this past year was a trial of denosumab versus placebo in the type of patient population that you described that did show some improvement in delaying what are, quote, metastases, at least in regards to metastases that are seen on a bone scan. I think that at this point, both the FDA as well as the scientific community are reviewing that data and trying to understand whether this is clinically significant. In other words, if at the end of the day, do patients do better with fewer side effects when we start a drug early, remembering that a finding on a bone scan may or may not necessarily be symptomatic for the patient. In addition, there's a number of other drugs that have shown promise for this kind of indication that for which there have been some earlier studies and for which more definitive studies are being conducted. These include things such as as integrin inhibitors and other interesting drugs that are being evaluated.
Awesome. Thank you. And Dr. Showalter, did you want to add anything to that? Or?
Dr. Stadler summed it up very well.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Next question.
Our next question comes from Ismail R.
Hi, folks. Thank you so much for all the information that you just provided to us. Having just recently, 3 weeks ago, gone through a prostatectomy, is what you guys discussed a little while ago applicable in my life today?
Did you want to say a little bit more, Ismail, about what your concern was?
Oh, no, because I was listening to everything that the doctor shared about the caring for your bones during prostate mm-hmm. cancer. But since I had the prostatectomy, is that something that I have to be vigilant of from this point forward in my life?
Oh, excellent. That's an excellent question. And I'm going to ask Dr. Stadler to start to just address this in a general way, and then we'll hope you'll take that information, of course, back to your treating healthcare team. But Dr. Stadler, could you just say some general things about this
Sure. You know, in general, for patients who have undergone primary surgery for their prostate cancer, that is generally not accompanied by any other kind of drug therapy, androgen ablation, or anything like that. And the vast majority of patients who undergo primary surgery are cured of their disease and do not need any other kind of treatment. And so therefore, you know, aside from the usual, yes, you should eat well and exercise, I don't think that there's anything specific about the bones. Dr. Showalter may want to discuss briefly some of the issues of radiation and hormonal therapy and whether any attention should be paid to issues of bone health in patients who get the hormone therapy along with radiation therapy for primary treatment of their cancer.
Sure. Yeah, I can touch on that briefly. So very often when patients receive radiation therapy for intermediate or high-risk organ-confined prostate cancer, so these are patients who have prostate cancer just within the prostate gland and they have Gleason score 7 or higher prostate cancer, when they're counseled about treatment options, you know, one of the treatment options is surgery, and generally the radiation options may involve some period of time where they receive hormone therapy to lower their testosterone. And in receiving hormone therapy in this setting, we can see bone loss related to the hormone therapy. So many of these patients, or the patients really should discuss with their physicians about what to do in terms of preventing bone loss. And many of these patients are advised to continue to exercise as much as possible, as Dr. Stadler mentioned, and also counsel about vitamin D and calcium supplementation, as well as potentially bisphosphonate therapy.
Excellent. Thank you. Now our next question actually comes from one of our online participants, and that is the question of what supplements to take in terms of just maintaining bone, the bone structure, what kind of over-the-counter supplements might be helpful to take. Dr. Stadler, could you address that?
Sure. As I mentioned earlier, I think that the supplements that we generally recommend are simple calcium and vitamin D. There are multiple products that are out there, and we generally recommend to take a product that contains about 1,500 milligrams of calcium and 400 to 800 international units of vitamin D. And since the product varies so dramatically from even one part of the country to another part of the country, I generally advise patients to simply go to their pharmacist and with these numbers and ask the pharmacist to recommend a product. And in many ways, to recommend the product that's the cheapest, because there's not a lot of information that one is necessarily better than the other. The one thing I do tell patients to be careful about is if they take multiple supplements, they can actually get too much vitamin D. And, you know, this is a situation in which more is not necessarily better. Getting too much vitamin D can lead to increased risk for things like kidney stones and increased calcium levels that can have other complications.
And any other comments about other supplements? I know people often take many different supplements out there. Do you have any comments to make about patients informing their physicians about what they're taking to be sure it doesn't interact with whatever the treatments are?
So, yes, I think it's important to inform physicians about the other supplements and other things that you're taking. I think that it's important to recognize that many of the supplements that are sold do not have a lot of data associated with them as to whether they really provide benefit to patients or really provide a major impact on either the cancer or the bone, aside from what I mentioned. I therefore generally advise patients that a well-balanced diet with less fried foods and more fruits and vegetables and less processed meats is certainly something that is good for you, can help maintain your general health, and probably is good for your cancer treatment as well.
And Dr. Showalter, did you want to add anything in terms of patients undergoing radiation and any kind of supplements or anything that they're doing?
So there's one primary additional concern with radiation. I often get asked by patients about antioxidant therapies, antioxidant supplements, which can include a variety of ingredients with the goal of clearing their body of free radicals. We, in general, in radiation oncology clinics, because radiation actually works locally by damaging DNA within cancer cells through a process that involves free radicals, we generally ask our patients to not take their antioxidant supplements during the time of radiation. And other basic supplements like calcium, vitamin D, and even multivitamins, as Dr. Stadler alluded to, are perfectly appropriate. It's really difficult to deal with advising patients on supplements because, as Dr. Stadler mentioned, there's often so little data that we can turn to counsel patients regarding decisions. So I generally stick with basic principles, diet, exercise, calcium and vitamin D, and then just during the radiation course, I request that patients hold on the antioxidants.
Excellent. And now there's another question from one of our online participants just about the whole concept of exercise and activity, both for Dr. Stadler and Dr. Showalter, in terms of just what happens when you're undergoing radiation, in terms of exercise or physical activity. So could you comment on that, Dr. Showalter?
Sure. So fatigue is one thing we deal with a lot. And so many of our patients who are undergoing radiation feel like being less active during the radiation. And this is particularly compounded for those patients who have a combination of hormone therapy to lower their testosterone and the fatigue associated with radiation. So I spend a lot of time encouraging patients to engage in as much light exercise as possible, partly because we found, at least in our patients in the clinic, that the patients who are more active during the day, who exercise more, who keep walking if they routinely walk, or playing tennis if they do that, end up sleeping better at night and have less disturbance of their normal sleep cycles, and in general have less fatigue. It's kind of surprising to think that. I also think it's important for patients with prostate cancer to focus on their overall health. So I think taking exercise and diet seriously is important. And it helps counteract some of the other effects of hormone therapy that we worry about, including weight gain. So I really think I spend a lot of time with my patients encouraging exercise and healthy eating as much as possible.
And Dr. Stadler, do you want to add?
I would just echo those same thoughts. In many ways, we say exercise, and exercise can be quite simple. And if the weather is good, stepping outside and going for walks for a couple of blocks. If the weather's not so good, if you live in either a hot or very cold environment, it's an excuse to go with your spouse or significant other and go to the mall and walk around the mall even. Even that much will make a significant difference.
That's an excellent idea, because I realize we're entering a phase of everyone on this call, you're all in very different time zones and parts of the country, so in some places it might be very warm, and actually globally too, some of you are in very warm climates, some are entering perhaps a potentially colder time, and so because one of the issues here is just the risk of fracture and just really, so for people who are concerned about that, are there any other tips that you would have in terms of just doing things that you feel are tried and true that would help to reduce any risk of fracture in addition to the treatments that we've already discussed, just even behavioral things or day-to-day activities?
I'm not sure there's a specific risk, but in general, common sense is extremely helpful. In other words, if an activity hurts, one should stop and ask the physician to try to evaluate that a little bit more carefully. There is obviously a difference between being a little bit sore and achy from doing something that one is unaccustomed to, and most of us should be able to distinguish that between, you know, true pain. And if something hurts or if one has shortness of breath or chest pain, well, obviously that is something, then one should stop those activities and discuss it with one's healthcare team.
And Carol, I just, if I add one thing, I think that what's really interesting about this question and Dr. Stadler's answer, I think that we're coming back again to the concept of communication. And a lot of these recommendations are so individualized for patients that it may depend upon their previous level of activity and how each activity feels, as Dr. Stadler mentioned. So just again, want to, you know, it's another plug for communication with the healthcare providers for all these questions.
Excellent. Wow. Thank you very much. Thank you. Then we have another question from one of our online participants just about the issues and concerns about the, some of the side effects of like osteonecrosis of the jaw. And Dr. Stadler, could you comment on that?
Sure. As I mentioned, all drugs have side effects. And a common side effect, I shouldn't say a common, a side effect of concern for both bisphosphonates and denosumab is osteonecrosis of the jaw, which is essentially a non-healing ulcer of the jaw around the teeth. Now, this is a relatively rare and unusual complication. It typically develops after prolonged use of these medications. In addition, the risk is highest in patients who simultaneously need to undergo major dental work. Now, therefore, as I suggested earlier, I think it is critical that before we begin these kind of medications, that there be a dental examination to assure that no major dental work needs to be performed, and if such work does need to be performed, that it be done prior to initiating zoledronate or denosumab. In addition, the usual recommendations for good dental hygiene with brushing of teeth and flossing and so forth are helpful. And then finally, you know, routine monitoring of the teeth and early recognition of a complication, if it were to occur, can lead to appropriate treatment and prevention of significant complications from, you know, an event like osteonecrosis of the jaw.
Thank you. Okay. Well, thank you. I want to thank our speakers. Really just extraordinary. This has been an extraordinary call today. Lots of information that we hope you'll all take back to your treating healthcare team and some of the tips and suggestions that you'll utilize. I also want to thank all of you who asked such great questions, both those who asked them live on the telephone and those of you who sent in your questions online. And I want to also thank all of you who've been listening. I do want to remind everyone that this is a one-hour education program and that in planning a program like this, we recognize that you have many needs that go far beyond the scope of a one-hour program. So that although we are about to conclude this particular workshop very soon, I do want to remind all of you that the services that you can access from Cancer Care, those continue. Those are endless. Those services continue far beyond when the program ends. And I do want to remind you that Cancer Care has a staff of 40 master's level trained oncology social workers, and we're here to provide a host of services, from practical and financial assistance to supportive counseling or someone to talk to who's a professional person. We also have a number of support groups that we offer on the telephone and online. And we have, of course, a number of these kind of educational workshops and materials and booklets that you can access from us. Most importantly, I would not want anyone to feel that you're alone in coping with prostate cancer and coping with cancer or your concerns. I do want you to feel you're now part of a community of support, and we are simply a telephone call, or you can visit our website as well, but we're really very close at hand, and that you can contact us at any time. Cancer Care can be contacted at 1-800-813-4673 or at www.cancercare.org. If you didn't get to ask your question or if you think of a question in a day or two and need to call us, do not hesitate to call us or email us. We are here to help you, and you are truly not alone. You are now part of this community of support. I want to thank all of you for participating today. I wanted to remind all of you to send us in your evaluations, what you thought, and I want to wish you all a very fine day. Thank you all.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop. You may disconnect and have a wonderful day.